This is Game Time AM. Now, back to Brad Lee and Jeff Jones from St. Louis Game Time on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
She's just a woman. Hey, good morning. Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, Kef and Us. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. Matt Davis pushing the buttons over there. We're talking a little bit of music during the break. We'd listen to a little bit of Soundgarden on the way out. Chris Cornell passed away overnight, age 52. Sad news for sure. Jeff was saying that Soundgarden was not in his sweet spot of music at the time.
Basically, so. I missed it. It was a little before me, and then by the time that I was getting into music, they were pretty much done. So
okay, so I was teasing this story before we went to break. So Elliot Friedman. He was Sportsnet, I believe?
Yes.
He was on a radio show in Edmonton, Edmonton 630 CHED, Ched. 630 Ched.
630 the Ched.
The Ched. So he said, I'm assuming they'll try to find to see if there's another team that's going to be interested in Eberle. I'm sure they're going to try that, no question about it. I think we need to kick the guy anymore. It's unnecessary. So he was pushed on a possible destination for the struggling forward. By the way, 13 playoff games this season, 2 assists, and let me look. No goals. Yeah. David Perron-esque performance by Jordan Eberle this year.
For twice as much money.
Yeah. So that's suboptimal, I think, is what I call that.
Well, and his regular season numbers also similar. 20 goals, 31 assists, only 51 points.
Only 51? That's not bad.
No, but for like a solid $6
million. $6 million a year, that's a little much.
And I think he has a bunch of term left, too.
And, you know, I think in recent history, saying that the Blues trading for fast, speedy forwards from Edmonton works every time, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine a time where it's gone bad. Eberle.
Neil Yakupov. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, Magnus Pajärvi.
So there's a history of trading there. Well, what
two more say? 2 more years of term, by the way, for Eberle. So 2 more years at $6 million per before he's a free agent.
So Friedman said, I think St. Louis is going to need to find an offensive player somewhere. Is that like it sounds like they're like out in the wilderness looking for offensive players. Hey, are you a goal scorer? Are you a goal scorer?
That's where they got Laterra and Sobotka both from, right? Like basically it was
from Siberia?
Yeah, out in the hinterlands.
So then apparently on this radio show, the Vegas Golden Knights were suggested as an option for Friedman. I think this is an interesting quote. He said, Vegas, everybody is talking about Vegas for everyone.
Yes, Vegas has become now like the graveyard dumping ground. If you have a contract that you don't like, the really easy / lazy thing to say is, Vegas.
He says, people must think Vegas is going to fill its team with everybody else's retreads the way everyone talks now. I don't know. I find it hard to believe that there's going to be no team out there that's going to say, you know what? We think Eberle can give us a bit of a shot. Find it hard to believe there's going to be no team out there that's going to say, you know what? We think Eberle can give us a shot.
And obviously, there are benefits to Jordan Eberle. The problem is that his cap number is so big for a guy with a mediocre regular season and a very poor playoff that, you know, teams that are competitive are not going to want that guy. They're just not.
So there's, you know, Leon Draisaitl. Did I say that name right?
You did.
Thanks. You should really, like, speak up and say, hey, or maybe we should have a sound effect to congratulate me. Maybe like something like a bell when I pronounce a guy's name.
Well, and here's the thing. I'm going to drop this now because it's been an hour since it happened.
Wait, are you going back and correcting a pronunciation?
Do you want me to do that?
Matt Davis, turn him down. He turned the microphone off for a second. That's awesome.
Red light.
Hey, his microphone doesn't work. Oh, it's back. The Edmonton Oilers have to re-sign Draisaitl. And they've got Eberle at $6 million, and they've got Ryan Nugent Hopkins at $6 million
for 4 more years.
4 more years? That's insane.
How about Milan Lucic for 15 more years at a full no move at $6 million?
What's Benoit Pouliot?
2 more years at $4 million.
Did I get that one right?
You did.
Awesome. Two more years at how much?
4.
So you've got 16 million guys. $16 million a year on Eberle, Nugent Hopkins, Pouliot. That, man, people give Doug Armstrong a hard time.
Plus the six on Lucic.
People give Doug Armstrong a hard time? And man, look, they're handing out contracts like they're candy up there in Edmonton.
And Connor McDavid is due for an extension after next season, and that's going to be a max out deal. That's going to be eight years, $10
million. Oh, you know, he might sign for three or four.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think you're going to get the bridge deal for McDavid.
No bridge deal. Yeah, that's fair.
Well, and then, look, Andre Sekera, four more years at 5.5 to play defense for the Oilers, and he's going to miss most of next season. He tore that ACL during the playoffs. He's gonna be out at least through the new year. So, that's some flexibility for them because they can put Sekera on long term IR and get that cap relief. So that will help them for sure.
So the hockey news thinks that Pouliot's declining stats could make him a buyout candidate. So that's interesting. So
yeah, but again, that means you're looking at 2/3 of that $8 million he has left. So that's a $6 million payout spread over the next 4 years, right? So basically, that's 1.5 against the cap in totally dead money for the next 4 years. That's a hard pill to swallow.
ESPN's Craig Custance says the Blues must
the last man standing.
Yeah, basically the last hockey guy other than Barry Melrose. The last hockey guy who writes words for ESPN says the Blues must add speed at center and create room for their up-and-coming players. He says they have two first-round picks to use as trade bait for a quality center. However, they could be better off retaining those picks and building from within. Making room for youth won't be easy. The expensive annual cap hits for veterans such as Paul Sazny, $7 million, Alex Steen, $5.75 million, and Jay Bomeister, $5.45 million will be tough to move. Newsflash, breaking news. The contracts the Blues have are hard to move. I'm glad someone outside St. Louis has recognized this.
And it's probably less than optimal when they're talking about the ease of moving Alex Steen's deal 6 months after he signed it.
Yeah, it hasn't even kicked in yet.
Well, right. It hasn't started, but I'm saying just in terms of how long it's been since ink went to paper.
Last line in the hockey news about the Blues. They could also try peddling center Yuri Laterra, parentheses, $4.7 million. However, the decline in his production is this big sticking point.
Yeah, the fact that he is not very good will make it hard for another team to want to pay him nearly $5 million a year to play for them.
Water is wet. Nighttime is dark.
You have to fill pages, Brad. It's the off season.
The sky is mostly blue most of the time.
How many ways can you write the Ottawa Senators are boring and Nashville's crowd is good? There are only so many things you can write about that, right? Like,
oh my gosh. Yuri Laterra. Declining production is a big sticking point. Lord.
I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what the hell they're... They have to do something.
They have to do something.
To be a fly on the wall in that planning meeting where Armstrong and Al McInnes and Kevin McDonald and Marty all sort of sit there with their lists of players and their contract grid, like... How many meetings do you think they start and Doug looked at it and goes, oh, man. I mean, look, that's got to happen,
right? We've conjectured back and forth whether or not Doug Armstrong has a contract extension in hand. His current contract ends after next season as general manager of the Blues. I have argued that he is not managing as a guy who is worried about his job because he's not doing a lot of short-term things to try to put the team in position to win now. And a lot of his stuff is the long game. And part of it is out of necessity because of the cap money that's designated the next two seasons.
Right.
That means they can't make a lot of moves. Here's another side of that coin. If you're in ownership and you're looking at whether or not you bring back Doug Armstrong, if you were to bring in a new general manager or promote a guy from within as general manager for this coming season, you fire him or move him up or do something, or after next season, you're tying that general manager's hands.
Sure.
What's he going to be able to do differently than what Doug Armstrong does or is what his capability is because of the contracts that are on the books, because of what's preventing them from making some major moves and bringing in an impact center?
The mitigating factor to that would be if the Blues were to hire a new general manager after next season, I would be very surprised if it were an outside candidate, which means that the person who it would be, i.e. likely Martin Brodeur or Al McInnes, is probably already involved in these conversations, and so that feedback is already being considered.
That's true. Hey, I heard the phone ring. Matt Davis, do we have someone on the line?
Yeah, it's Hockey Bob. He's wanting to discuss Yuri Laterra.
Okay. Ooh. Hey, Hockey Bob. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, guys. You know, first off, just on Doug Armstrong, and you're right. There are plenty of GMs out there, and I texted you three teams that have spent a lot of money on player contracts. And, yes, the Rangers did win a Stanley Cup a couple decades ago, but they've spent more money on player contracts over the last 20 years than a lot of teams combined, and they haven't really had a lot to show for it. There's Edmonton, and there's that team in Toronto that hasn't been relevant in the NHL since they last won a Stanley Cup the year that the Blues, before the Blues came into existence. So, yeah, I mean, I know that I could never be a GM of a hockey club. I think I understand the business part, but I know there's a lot more to it. But, you know, most GMs, you can't give a player a 1 or 2 year contract unless it's an older guy like what he gave Gomez and brought in last year. I can't remember the players that he brought in as emergency players while the Blues were injured. But, you know, being a GM is not an easy job. And, you know, I just have a hard time criticizing folks like that because, you know, I couldn't do the job as good as him. Now, on Yuri Laterra, okay, last year, well, he was brought to the Blues on the specific advice from their star player, Vladimir Tarasenko, because he played with Vladimir Tarasenko. And last year, he had a pretty good year. He was one of the main reasons why the Blues got as far as they did. So this year, he's not having a good year. Now, I mean, I know people say he's slow and stuff like that, but many athletes in every sport have terrible second years in the first year of their major sport careers. So why is it that nobody can believe that Yuri Laterra can turn it around next year
because this
become
is
a better player?
This was his third year and not his second year, because in his second year he had a massive drop off. He went from 44 to 34 points and then 34 to 22 points. He just finished his third year and had the team, not the second. So
I must have forgot a year.
He
came in 2014, 2015.
You forgot a year because he had a terrible season last year in addition to this one, right? The seasons all blend together, and he has been forgettable for 2 years now while raking in big piles of money, and that is the reason there's a criticism.
Even that first season, it was the first half of the season, he was good. After that, he already started trailing.
Yeah, when he got the contract extension.
Basically, look, he has 218 games played in the NHL. For the last 160 of them, he's been a ghost.
14 goals, 30 assists, then 9 goals, 25 assists. This past season, 7 goals, 15 assists.
And look, the thing with Laterra, if he was making 1.7 and not 4.7, you would hear a lot less complaining. But the cap number...
Hardly any complaining.
Yes, the cap number associated with the production is a huge problem because that's a large amount of money tied up in a player who doesn't score. He played it on his most common line mate this season was Vladimir Tarasenko. And he managed to put up like 6 primary assists playing on a line with one of the most gifted goal scorers in the NHL.
Hey,
that's
Hockey
just
Bob,
not acceptable.
Hockey Bob, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining the show again.
Oh, yep. You're welcome.
Thanks, Bob. Right. We should point out, too, by the way, that when the Rangers were passing out all of those massive contracts 15 years ago at the end of the 90s, there was no salary cap, right? So the Rangers, by virtue of having ownership that had a lot of money, could sign people to whatever deal they wanted to. And the Maple Leafs are certainly relevant now. Auston Matthews scores 40 goals this season. Mitch Marner, William Nylander, all extraordinarily impressive, exciting players. The Leafs, you know, pushed the Capitals to 7 games, I think, a year or two ahead of schedule. Edmonton has some bad contracts. But they cleaned house. They fired everyone, right? Those contracts were all the workings of Kevin Lowe and Craig McTavish, and those guys all got the boot, right? So you have Peter Chiarelli now running the show in Edmonton, and it's a different regime. So yes, that is the point, is that when bad contracts are signed that make the team unable to get the support they need, then you clean house.
Yeah, and his playoff numbers, and I'm going to... let's see, regular season, we're going to hit the playoffs here. His playoff numbers have not exactly... 2014-15, his first year in the NHL, the Blues played 5 games. He had 2 assists. Last year, they make the conference final, 20 games, 3 goals, 6 assists. That's solid production. Probably still falls a little bit under what you're hoping for a guy playing, A, with Tarasenko so often, and be a guy making almost $5 million a year.
If he was a tweener third or fourth line forward and he was making a third of what he makes now, then you would hear a lot less about him. And, you know, the other part of this that is really frustrating for me, at least, is that basically, Vladimir Tarasenko has gone to management and recommended two players from the KHL.
Yeah.
In his time here.
Well, and to be fair, Yuri Letaire was a draft pick of the Blues.
He was, yes. He was already Blues property, and so there were no one else really could make a move on Letaire.
2008 draft, drafted by St. Louis in the third round.
And as an overager, too, he was 21 when he was drafted. Because he's
65th overall. He was 21 when he was drafted?
Yes, he's an 87 birth year. He's almost exactly my age.
Oh, my gosh.
So the thing, like...
He will turn 30 December 23rd.
Yes. So Vladimir Tarasenko recommended two players. One was Yuri Letaire, who came over. The other was Artemi Panarin, who the Blues did not have interest in, which is a pretty big bummer, considering that Artemi Panarin is a point-per-game phenom.
How could you not get the guy who sounds like he's from the Panera Bread Company, based in St. Louis?
Right. You have, and
the
they,
marketing.
They call him the Bread Man. That's his nickname.
It's like the Blues not drafting Martin St. Louis.
Well, I know that, look, there are plenty of writers for Game Time and friends of ours who have complained about the size fetish of the St. Louis Blues. For example, they drafted Brett Ponick in the second round because he was 6'7", and it turned out that he didn't know how to skate or something.
His name isn't Brett Ponich.
It is not.
That's how it looks like it's
Ponick.
Spelled. All right, fair enough.
Like Richard Ponick, but spelled
differently. He's like 6'5", and couldn't skate.
Yeah, he's massive. Couldn't skate. The Blues did a couple of those, right? There was a forward, Sam Kerker. Sam Kerker was a guy they drafted in the second round.
Cody Beach.
Yeah. A bunch of guys. Cody Beach, at least, I think he's still in the org. I think he played for the Wolves maybe this year. I don't know. But in any event, they went and they saw Panarin and they said, too small. and that goes back to what we talked about before, where the Blues follow the league and they don't ever forge their own path, because at the point in time when they were deciding that Panarin was too small, they were getting rubbed out by the Kings a couple years in a row and getting grounded into the boards, and so they decided that Panarin was not going to be able to play in the league, and lo and behold, he is an elite goal scorer, an elite point getter in this league.
I'm gonna leave that first comment that you made at the beginning of that statement alone. You're listening to Game Time AM here in 59 The Fan, KFNS 105.7 HD2. Streaming live on InsideSTL.com. Is the first hour of the show up on the internet? It is. Matt Davis nods to me. So if you're just getting up and you want to hear us talk about the playoff game last night, 5-1 win for the Ottawa Senators over the shocked Pittsburgh Penguins, possibly the end of Marc-Andre Fleury in Pittsburgh last night. We broke that down. We talked a little bit of Cardinal baseball, losing in 13 innings last night, 5-4 to the Boston Red Sox, going hitless in the last five innings. If you want to hear us talk about Chris Cornell dying, the lead singer of Soundgarden, who was scheduled to be in St. Louis this weekend at Point Fest. We talked about that for a little bit. So you can find that on InsideSTL.com, iTunes, Google Play Store, your favorite podcast app.
Our buddy Lexington Steele texting in.
And what's the number there?
His number or the number here?
Not his number. Not his number.
855-282-8255. 855-282-8255. 855-282-Sanford-Pareco.
What did Lex have to say?
He said that he was commenting on the logic of turning away from Panarin on the basis of size while simultaneously committing to Fabry and Schwartz, which is fair.
Drafting Tyratti.
Right. Yeah, not exactly giant guys. But then he points out that they could still have Panarin in 2 years, which is possible. He will be an unrestricted free agent in 2 years.
And there's no way Chicago's going to be able to afford him.
They're going to have to juggle pretty hard. It's a good problem to have. It is a good problem to have, but it's pretty hard to imagine like having both Marian Hossa and Artemi Panarin, for example, in Chicago in 2 years.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting. You talk about guys who could be
Hossa might be up by then. I have to look.
But he might come off. What, Brent Seabrook? He signed to like what 2,100 or something.
And actually, you know, Hossa has four more years at 5.2. Seabrook is at least signed through 2022-23 at 6.8. Here's a fun thing to do.
How long was Hossa's deal?
I believe it was 10 or 11 years when they signed it.
So what was funny was my daughter was like in first grade, kindergarten or first grade, and when he signed that contract, I remember thinking to myself, when his contract ends, she's going to be getting her driver's license.
Yeah.
That's insane.
So I have two questions as I look at the cap matrix here for the Chicago Blackhawks. Number one, how much more than Duncan Keith do you think Brent Seabrook makes?
How much more than Duncan Keith does Brent...
Because Duncan Keith is signed to one of the most cap-friendly cap-friendly deals in the league.
$2 million?
$1.3 million. Okay. Seabrook is getting $1.3 million per more than Duncan Keith. That's crazy. Yeah. That's almost indefensible. Now, the Chicago Blackhawks, how many forwards do they have that have a cap hit of more than $1 million a year?
Well, there's Kane and Taves.
Yep.
Hossa.
Yep.
Two more?
Exactly. Only five forwards with a cap hit of $1 million a year or more.
They can't even field two lines.
And in fact, all of those five have a cap hit of at least $3 million. So you got Kane and Taves and Hossa. Can you name the other two players making at least $3 million a year for the Chicago Blackhawks?
Christopher Stieg is not there anymore.
Nope. Both European.
Okay, I don't know.
Artem Anisimov has a cap hit of 4.5 through 2021, and Marcus Kruger at $3 million a year.
Who's paying Marcus Kruger $3 million a year?
Well, it's going to be the Florida Panthers here pretty soon. So Kruger is the fifth player with a cap hit. But
that's just a pipeline.
That's crazy.
Chicago
to me. But you look. I mean, you look down the rest of the Blackhawks roster, and it's well. And actually, I say that Panarin next year jumps from $812,000 to $6 million, and Richard Panik for next year jumps from $875,000 to $2.8 million. So they do have some jumps coming up. But at the end of this season, five forwards. The sixth highest paid forward on the Blackhawks roster at the conclusion of this season was John Hayden, who was there for all of 15 games and signed an ELC coming out of the NCAA.
Oh my gosh. I think he scored his first NHL goal against the Blues.
I believe he did.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's a nice problem to have because you've got two of the better. I mean, you've got Patrick Kane. I know that we have been dogging Jonathan Taves a little bit, but you know he's got three Stanley Cup rings and
he's in the Hall of Fame already, right? I mean, Jonathan Taves can put up six more 40-point seasons and he's still going to the Hall of Fame.
Even if he doesn't do that, he's probably still going to the Hall of Fame.
Yes,
Mr. Leadership,
Captain Serious.
He's the Mark Messier of today's hockey, right?
Better hair,
but I mean, when you talk about leadership, isn't that the leadership award named after Mark Messier?
It is, which I know that people in Vancouver find irony in that because when Messier was traded to Vancouver, he demanded it to be the captain instead of Trevor Linden, and there was a whole thing. And
I was watching, you know, there's some amazing stuff on YouTube. I know that's not breaking news. There is a retrospective of the New York Rangers, and I was trying to remember, I was talking to someone about how great Mark Messier was, and I said, you know what, in that run to the Stanley Cup in 94, he had the guaranteed win against the New Jersey Devils. And it was on the road, down the turnpike, basically.
Right.
In East Rutherford, in Jersey. Guaranteeing they were going to win that game and send it back to Game 7, back across the river at Madison Square Garden. And the Devils got out to a lead that game. And if you go and search it, there's like a 10-minute clip. And at one point, there's a scrum after the whistle. And they kind of zoom in on Mark Messier's face. And he looks like he's going to kill someone. I mean, rage, pure rage. He went on to get the hat trick in that game.
I was going
to
say, I thought he had a hat trick in that game.
In the guaranteed game, come from behind victory at New Jersey, crowd is going absolutely insane. And then all of a sudden, they take the lead, and all of the fans who drove across the river, all the Rangers fans who invaded the arena there in Jersey, start going nuts. And I think his last goal was, I think, an empty netter. And gets the hat trick, and obviously they come back. And was it Stefan Matteau with the big winner in Game 7 that sent them to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Vancouver Canucks, and then the parade down Broadway in New York City.
So not only did the Rangers win that Game 6 4-2, exactly three players had points in that game. The Rangers scored four goals in that game, and only three players had points.
Who were they?
Messier with three goals and an assist. Alex Kovalev, a goal and two assists.
He had the first one.
And Brian Leetch with two assists. No one else even got on the score sheet.
Yeah.
That is domination from your team's best players in the game where you have to have. Like, that is textbook.
And they show, so during that clip I was talking about, and basically there's a bunch of interviews from like Rangers fans, Devils fans, players, broadcasters, writers, and the cavalcade of Rangers that became future Blues players a couple seasons later when Mike Keenan took over. And there's Esa Tiikanen, there's Brian Noonan. I think Glenn Anderson might have been on that team.
Let's go. So I can get on the list. The first, so Glenn Anderson, Greg Gilbert, Steve Larmer was a Blue for a while.
Doug wasn't.
Yes, he was. Wasn't he?
Steve.
Oh, Larmer's, no, you're right. I'm sorry. No. I'm thinking of Brian Noonan. Sorry.
Yeah.
Anderson, Gilbert, Doug Lidster, McTavish, Mateau, Asatikinen, Jay Wells.
So seven.
Seven players that were on the Rangers roster that year.
It was like Mike Keenan didn't know any other players in the National Hockey League if they hadn't played for him before.
And
like,
somehow Adam Creighton was not on that team. I think
but he played for him in Chicago.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so... So if you played for Mike Keenan, you were guaranteed a job for a good 5 years.
Yeah.
At some point.
I mean, it was unbelievable the guys that he would bring back.
Yeah.
Charlie Huddy.
Oh man, Charlie Huddy. Jeez.
Talk about a traffic cone, man.
What were they thinking?
I mean, that, like Charlie Huddy. I was actually at the game. I don't know why Charlie Huddy makes me think of this guy, but I was at the game where Rich Pilon broke his arm or whatever. And he ended up playing like six games. He sounded like a 3-year deal and ended up playing like six games for the Blues.
You know how they say that if women spend enough time together, their biological cycles get linked up? I got to tell you, right before you said Rich Pilon's name, I was thinking his name. And the question was...
Because it was totally immobile defenseman.
Well, and I was going to say, in your memory of Blues traffic cone defenseman...
Yeah.
Who's on that list? And the first one on my...
Is Rich Pilon?
That was the first name I came up with.
It's because his name is so very near to Pilon. What an apt description of Rich Pilon that he is such a Pilon.
It's like if you have a kid and you name him Jeeves, he's going to be a butler.
Right.
And you've predetermined his destiny for his entire life. Rich Pilon was going to be a defenseman.
He was going to be a Pilon.
A slow defenseman.
Yeah, not a very good one. Yeah. But
Bill Holder.
Bill Holder was like an offensive guy. Bill Holder had some wheels.
He did not play defense really.
I will say, perhaps the most underrated of the offensive defensemen in the history of the mid '90s Blues, a gentleman by the name of Christer Olsen, because Christer Olsen became Pavel Dimitra.
Yeah, I remember.
Was traded to Ottawa for Pavel Dimitra because Dimitra had issues with the coaches there and was an attitude problem.
Hands down, the best trade that Mike Keenan ever made.
Not even close. I don't even know what would be in the conversation. That's got to be. I mean, that's a top five trade of all time for the Blues.
And it's
right?
His last trade ever.
Top three trade of all time. I mean, what is a better? So okay, so
the
you
Brett
have
Hull trade.
The Brett Hull trade. You have Christer Olsen for Pavel Dimitra. You have David Runblad for the pick that becomes Vladimir Tarasenko.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the short list, right? Are we missing any obvious like massive win trades for the Blues?
Oh, the Kevin Shattenkirk deal.
Well, it was okay. I mean, they didn't win anything. And
wait, is it the trade that brought him to town or the trade that he left town?
Well, when Zach Sanford wins the Hart Trophy next year, it'll be the trade where he left town.
Whoa. Ring that bell.
Where's that hot take horn?
Pumping the tires there. You're listening to Game Time AM here in 590 The Fan. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. Matt's over there maybe paying attention to what we're talking about. I mean, we're still talking hockey. We could talk movies if you want. You know,
text from Catfish, by the way, says listening to a hockey savant, Rain Man thinks that you're intense.
He's talking about you.
Yo, I think so.
Yeah. He's saying that you're a hockey savant?
And again, it's not analysis. It's just that I have a good trivia brain. Like, it just names stick in my head, right? Like,
you're a storehouse of information.
For example, I can reach in and pull out the name Libor Zabransky, and it's not a challenge. Like, it's just that name is in my brain.
I'll give you a quick test.
Okay.
The Slovak pack.
The Slovak pack would have been. Well, okay. So the forward line was Hanzus, Bartechko, and Dimitra. Was Zabransky was one of the defensemen. Am I missing anybody?
No, I think that's it.
Yeah.
And then Ladislav Nagy
was also Slovak. Yeah, and only played a couple of games here before being included in the Tkachuk trade.
Mm-hmm.
With Hanzus, right? It was Nagy and Hanzus. Nagy, Hanzus, Jeff Tafe, and a pick, I think was the original deal.
What was the deal that brought Al MacInnis to St. Louis?
Phil Housley, straight up.
Yeah. How did they acquire Phil Housley?
Phil Housley, let's see here. Before he played for the Blues, was he in Anaheim maybe for a season?
No, Winnipeg.
Winnipeg. So he would have been. Was it a trade from Winnipeg? So this is
you're a young. You're
this
a young
is reaching
guy.
The outer limits of my knowledge here.
Nelson
so,
Emerson.
Okay, now that would have been the first name in my mind was Kevin Miller for whatever reason, but Nelson Emerson would have been the
Nelson
second
Emerson.
One. Okay,
you know, and Nelson Emerson was kind of in the mold of a Cliff Ronning, where you had an undersized guy who was kind of a power play specialist a little bit.
Yep.
And you know, you give him some time on the power play, and you've got lots of offensive guys around him. He racks up a lot of points. he becomes valuable, and the front office says, hey, he's really not that good. We should cash him in now. And they did that with Cliff Ronning. They did that with Nelson Emerson.
And Emerson's career tapered off after he left the Blues. Cliff Ronning had a long and fruitful career after he left the Blues.
Ended in Nashville, I believe.
I believe that's correct, yeah.
Nelson Emerson, though, was on one of my favorite named lines of all time. The Emerson.
Was he the electric company, I'm guessing?
The Emerson Electric line.
So what? Emerson, Hall, and Shanahan?
No, it was Emerson, Shanahan, Craig Janney.
Emerson and Janney on the same line. That seems like they would both be playing center, right?
They put Emerson on the wing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's dangerous, too, because really you want somebody between Janney and Shanahan.
But
you need a buffer in between those
two
guys.
You got the passer, you got the quick little guy, and you got the big, tall, physical guy. It had all the makings. Plus, you know, they traded wives at one point.
That's a little swappity-do. Yeah. I don't know if they traded much as...
one traded.
Shanny picked one up on waivers, maybe. That's how we're gonna put that.
That is, now,
the
since we've got a little time
expansion
here,
draft.
That is one of the... Okay, so... It turned out true, obviously, because they end up getting married, Brendan Shanahan and Craig Janney's ex-wife. He became an American citizen because of her.
Yeah.
They're still together, have kids together.
Well, so here's the thing.
At the time it happened, though, it was not reported. It was not reported.
And look, I don't know that it should. I mean, that's a guy's personal life, and it doesn't... That's a guy's personal life, and if it doesn't involve a police report, like Doug Gilmore did, then, you know...
Well, that was probably a false police report.
But here's an interesting other police story. Here's the thing, though, I will say. The Blues basically, as I think about it, have had like one big personal scandal a decade, and so we're due, right? Because the 80s, it was Gilmore. The 90s would have been the Janney Shanahan thing. The 2000s would have been old Mr. Michael Jefferson. So here in the 2010s, the Blues are due for one, right? Like they haven't had their big personal scandal in the 2010s.
No, they're due. You jinxed them.
I didn't jinx them. I'm just saying, if it happens,
you know what?
It's time for the worm to turn.
If you go back to the 70s, number three in the motorcycle
accident. That would have been, that was the 70s.
Bob Gassoff.
Go. Yeah.
Dying in a motorcycle accident. What would be in the 60s?
I mean, they were barely existing in the 60s. Maybe they get
a pass. So you give them a pass.
Well, but wasn't that all? That was the whole Scotty Bowman thing, right? That was this. I don't know if that really counts as
the firing on
issue.
The firing,
yeah, the
Christmas
firing, right? That's all the 60s, I think, right? So it's,
well, and then you also had in the 80s the Saskatoon Blues.
But that's closer to business and less of like a personal peccadillo that creates some sort of tempest in a teapot.
That's true.
What a good sentence that was, by the way.
But you know, at the time when Brendan Shanahan was traded to Hartford for young Chris Pronger. I think the number two overall pick a couple seasons before.
That happened during my birthday party. I was at, so I, we were members of this is going to sound hashtag blessed, but believe me, it's not. We were members of this private swim and tennis club on
what year is this?
Oh, hell, it probably would have been 1995, right?
I think so.
Yeah, it would have been the summer of 95 before the 95-96 season, so it would have been my eighth birthday. That trade broke that evening while I was at my birthday party at the swim club. And the only reason that I knew who Chris Pronger was because I had a card. I had a hockey card of Chris Pronger from the previous year with the Hartford Whalers. And that's why I knew
he had been arrested for underage drinking at some point.
I had no idea about that.
Pronger basically was kind of labeled as a malcontent very early in his career.
Okay. And that I didn't know anything about.
That's why he was available.
I just knew that we had traded Brendan Shanahan and that it was for a guy whose card that I had.
So, yeah, 95. I was not 21 at the time, and I was hanging out with some friends and my girlfriend at the time. And one of them, either he had a fake ID or he worked with someone who was 21, or he didn't really pass for 21. So somehow we were illegally drinking at a friend's house. His parents were actually out of town.
Yeah.
And the trade came over TV when I think we were going to watch a movie or something. And we were flipping around to get the VCR on the right channel, and there was breaking news that Brendan Shanahan had been traded for Chris Pronger, and I was flabbergasted.
Yeah.
And if the news had not come out yet about Mrs. Craig Janney yet, and apparently that was the impetus that your team leader is stealing the wife of his supposed best friend and line mate.
Right.
I can't have him on my team, said Mike Keenan.
Text from the 210 says, J. Bo Meester is going to be busted for trafficking cocaine now.
Oh my God.
Which we should.
Allegedly,
right. We should
that's
point
not
out
happened.
That
it's fake news.
Very
fake
unlikely news. That J. Bo Meester is trafficking in illegal narcotics.
fake news.
But That would be, I mean, that would be among the funniest. It wouldn't be funny, but
He does not have a Breaking Bad haircut.
He does not.
No.
He has a bad haircut, but not a Breaking Bad haircut.
It's a $5 haircut.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
The name is Brad, by the way, Matt. I could tell you my buddy Brad was texting me. I had a night in high school. I played hockey with Brad. We were good friends. Me and him and our third buddy Steve-O. We used to always hang out at Steve-O's house.
You're friends with Steve-O from Jackass?
Everybody's got a friend named Steve that they call Steve-O, right? Everybody's got one of those. If you have a friend named Steve, you called him Steve-O. Everybody, yeah.
Yeah. I'm the only one in the room that doesn't have I have a friend named Steve, but I never called him Steve.
There was one night, and I swear to God, we were not like, there was no weed being smoked and there were no beverages being consumed, but we just laid on Steve-O's couches and just yelled names of old blues players back and forth for like an hour.
All right, so is it Brad on the line? Hey, Brad, good morning.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up, Bradley?
Jeffro.
What's going on, buddy?
I'll just back away from the microphone. Go ahead.
No, you can stay here. We want to talk to you, too.
There you go, man. I was just calling
in to tell the story about how we'd sit around, play NHL hits, and just name off old blues players and laugh, like Jeff Batters, Jeff Odgers,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
Rob Pearson, Dale Howard, Chuck. Yeah, just the collection. The number of guys that played for those mid-90s blues teams that Mike Keenan had for 15 games, and then they came here and they played for 5 games. It is unbelievable how many of those guys.
Darren Rumble. I remember when he played for the Blues and he fell down, and I don't remember who. It still might have been Joe Micheletti. He goes, Darren Rumble, he takes a tumble. And we just laugh forever.
Those guys were pretty unbelievable.
Harry York
is a big, well, he had that elite third line for a while, right? Where you had York and you had Craig Conroy and Scott Pellerin. They were
number 37. What?
Yeah, 37 oh, Harry, man. And he had 33 on Pellerin and 22 on Conroy, and I was convinced they were the best penalty killing line in the league. And the reason I think that you get convinced about that is, like, you know, I would play NHL 97 and I would do two things. Number one, I would create all of the fake Mighty Ducks and put them on the team with the real Mighty Ducks. So I had Adam Banks skating around out there. And then I had all those mid-90s blues where I would have, like, I remember, here is a good name. Konstantin Shafranov. Is that a name, that Brad, that you have in your punch bowl? Either Brad, I guess?
No.
I do, but I don't remember a number.
He played like, I don't remember a number, but he played like 5 games for the Blues and scored 3 goals in 5 games. Like, he was the Keith McDonald of the Blues, right? When the Cardinals had Keith McDonald come up, hit like 6 home runs in a weekend and then disappear forever. Shafranov was the same deal. He came up and scored a bunch of goals in like 1 weekend and then you never saw him ever again. But he was,
that's so funny.
He was on my NHL 97 top line with Gretzky and Hull. It was Gretzky, Hull, and Konstantin Shafranov for like a whole week.
I've lost control of the radio show. Obviously.
That's awesome. Hey, one more thing. You know how they got Stomp to Schwab? You guys need to do some kind of contest when the blue season starts back up.
That would actually be pretty fun.
Stomp Jeffro.
You name some players, you gotta name the numbers that they wear, whatever, and who knows what happens there.
That actually would be a pretty... I like that suggestion. Name the random blues player and see if we can guess the number he wore. All right, Brad,
yeah,
thanks.
I'll be calling in to beat you, buddy, but love
the
show, and I'm glad that you guys are on.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling in.
All right, see you guys.
Yeah, take it easy.
So, hey, this is Game Time AM. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. That was Brad on the phone. Matt Davis is answering your phone calls. If you want to dial in and give us your favorite Dennis Chassé moment, maybe.
Yeah, man.
855-282-8255. I know random guys, too. I think I told the story one time that, you know, when the...
Well, and here's the thing. Between the two of us, because I'm guessing you can cover all the 80s guys better than
not,
I can.
Not all the 80s
but,
guys.
But better than me, for sure, because that's going to predate me. So we can basically... Like, we have 35 or 40 years of blues history between the two of us covered down to the deep third liners.
Like, you know, there was a time when Rick Mahar was the captain of the St. Louis Blues, and then he was out for a season, and there was a car commercial. I think it was Bellman, maybe.
Okay.
And there was a truck that was driving by a pond.
Now, Rick Mahar won the Selke here, didn't he?
He did, yeah. before he missed that season for injury. And so there was a truck that was driving by a pond, and there were some ducks, like a family of ducks walking. And when they put the video together for the commercial, they wanted the truck to come into the screen from a certain side. And apparently forward, it didn't work. So they played the video in reverse. So you're supposed to be watching the truck, but if you looked at the bottom of the screen, there were ducks walking backwards in the commercial. And people noticed it. It played all year. And so then the next year, Rick Mahar does the commercial, and they play the same clip again, and they cut to him, and he goes,
what about those ducks? Where are they going? So they actually like kind of made a mistake in the commercial. They let it go, and then they like made fun of it the next year. Like, hey, there's backward walking ducks in our commercial.
Abe Froman getting in on this, texting in some names, Kurt Giles, Issa Tikkanen. But my favorite thing that he's texted in so far is Paul Cavallini's finger.
Oh, Doug Wilson, slap shot from the point, San Jose.
So when
it was probably at the Cow Palace. No, was it here? I think it was here.
I think it was here. Yeah. When I used to officiate youth hockey, I was calling a game in Cahokia one morning, and Paul Cavallini was coaching a youth team. He was on the bench and showed me his mangled finger.
Raise your hand. Dan Hogan on Twitter says Rudy Pocheck.
Rudy Pocheck is a good one. He was in the list of guys who wore number 20 who were terrible. Mike Peluso was in that crowd. Adam Creighton, number 20, who was not any good.
Peter Chianik?
26.
Oh, gosh darn it. See, I can...
The 20 on that team was Timofey Shishkinov, who was also not any good.
Lord. Raise your hand if you've seen Paul Cavallini naked.
Oof.
I don't...
Let's tell this story.
That's a random... Gallagher, who used to run the paper, he played in the Blues Fantasy Camp a few years ago. And at the end of Blues Fantasy Camp, they have a dinner. And so they have like a big tent, and there's, you know, like chicken and ribs and stuff and free beer and stuff. And you hang out, and like everybody who's played in the thing, and most of them bring their girlfriends and or wives or whatever. And Gallagher, his wife didn't want to go.
Okay.
So he said, "You want to be my date and hang out and, you know, whatever. Hey, it's free food and free beer."
So,
I said, okay.
This story starts with you going on a date with a man and ends with naked Paul Cavallini?
So he was playing in one of the last games at the fantasy camp, and on his team was Paul Cavallini. And so I texted him that I was here. He's like, "Oh, hey, come back to like dressing room 12 or something." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I walk in, and there's dudes getting out of the shower. I'm like, I could have waited in the hallway, man. And out of the shower comes Paul Cavallini. And I'm like, well, that's a story to tell later on in life.
Yeah,
here we are.
I got a couple of those, but they're a little too contemporary. I got to tell them off the air. I think actually the big one I've told you, I guess. But
okay, fair enough.
Yeah, let's just say the traveling Yogs would be jealous.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
So yeah, we got some activity here in the text box. Apparently, when you just list off old Blues from the 90s,
people just start
fired
in.
Up. Actually, I'll tell you what would have been fun. We got to do this again one morning, and we got to get Rivs on the phone. Then we need to have a conversation with Jamie Rivers as we name off obscure Blues from the 90s.
And he's like, because, oh, that guy was great.
Yeah, because Rivers, I guess you would have some. I guarantee you Rivers has a story about each and every one of those guys.
Probably.
But Zeebo's wrestling buddy texting in to say, can we get some love for Garth Butcher?
I love Garth Butcher.
Here's the thing.
The trade killed the Blues.
Garth Butcher murdered, and he didn't, but Brian Sutter, by virtue of trading for Garth Butcher,
It's Ron Caron.
No, it was Sutter. Sutter wanted
Ron
that
Caron
deal.
Ron Caron was the general manager.
Yes, but Brian Sutter was the guy who demanded a little more grit, a little more sandpaper.
So they trade four guys.
They trade their entire second line.
Including Nelson Emerson to Vancouver for Garth Butcher and Dan Quinn, who was later accused of sexual assault. But it's a heck of a golfer.
Oh, yeah?
They have that the Pebble Beach Pro-Am every year, and he was a star in that golf tournament every single year for like 5, 7, 8 years running. Who else was that? Let's see. There was Robert Dirk, Jeff Courtnall, Nelson Emerson. Who was the fourth guy? Sergio Momesso. Who a bunch of his stuff was stolen from his house.
And by the way, I don't think it was Emerson. I think it was Ronning.
Oh, it was Ronning. You're right. Well, they both wore number 7, and they both were like the same like size guy, and I kind of sometimes mix those guys up. Right. Cliff Ronning. Nelson Emerson came along later.
Yes.
So
Emerson was the replacement for Ronning after Ronning was traded.
And the Blues only finished like, what, 1 point behind Chicago for the President's Trophy that year?
I
think it was like 105, 104.
Yeah.
And it was basically what happened was the Blues played Sunday afternoon, and they passed the Hawks. And so KMOX that night on Sunday night, the Hawks were playing like a 6 o'clock game at home. And KMOX actually played the audio of the Hawks game. And I stayed up and listened to it.
Now, would there have still been some residual interest there between the Wirtz family and St. Louis at that point?
In 1991?
I mean, I don't know how long those tentacles reached.
I don't think so.
Okay.
It was basically, hey, if the Hawks lose, then the Blues finished first overall.
Right.
The Hawks did not lose. But then the Hawks did lose in the first round to the Minnesota North Stars. So
TJ, I'm sorry, texting in to say the meat is on the burner.
The meat is on the burner.
Yeah, which is totally fair. By the way,
if we could find that audio somewhere.
Well, I'm sure we could. Speaking in the breaking news department, the president's tweeting.
Oh yeah,
He is.
What did the president say?
The president said, with all of the illegal acts that took place in the Clinton campaign and Obama administration, there was never a special counsel appointed, and he spelled counsel wrong.
He found his phone.
Yeah, honestly, breaking news.
The president finds his phone.
I don't think he found it. I think what happened is that he
got a new one.
Yeah, he convinced like Jared to go out to CVS and buy him a burner and smuggle it into the White House. Right, like.
I was watching CNN last night when they were talking about the appointment of the special counsel, the former head of the FBI, and somebody said, you know what? The president hasn't tweeted for more than 24 hours, and he's been, you know, they had a three-sentence release reaction from the White House that was very measured, and when they read the release, one of the commentators on CNN said, obviously that was produced by the public relations office at the White House. That's not how the president talks.
Right.
Maybe... They said, maybe the president has realized that him talking has gotten himself into more hot water, and maybe he's learned his lesson, and he's going to stop tweeting and really throwing kerosene on the fire.
Look, one of the reporters, I think it was Maggie Haberman yesterday, tweeted the basic truth of all this, which is stop waiting for a pivot. He's 70. People don't change.
Well, and I think I saw about 10 versions of the same tweet. Hey, you're shocked that Donald Trump acts like he's acted his whole entire life? Yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, this is who he is. There was a blind quote yesterday from Republican House members who apparently were leaving the chamber, and I guess a reporter overheard them saying, like, every bleeping day with this, it's like watching a reality show. It's, yeah, man, you guys lined up behind a reality TV star. That's who you elected to be president. I mean, what? This is what happened. Like, and here's the ultimate thing with this is, do I believe that the president intended to obstruct justice? No, I do not believe that. I honestly do believe, like, and the same deal with the Kevin McCarthy stuff yesterday, right? Do I believe that he seriously thinks that Trump gets paid by Russia? No, I don't believe that. I believe that that's just what they joked about, because there is a dagger of truth in there. And I forget, Jason Kander yesterday had the phrase, and I think it was Al Franken that quoted it, but basically it was like, You talk about a serious thing in a humorous manner. You're joking, but you're not joking.
Like when Fox and Friends yesterday said that Comey might be a criminal because he didn't report the things that he heard the president say.
Oh no, that's a serious belief. I think that's.
Oh, it's comedy,
right?
Yeah, well, that's comedy.
But
we should totally have Fox and Friends on here in the studio in the morning.
We could just do running commentary on Steve Ducey.
Yeah, we'd laugh randomly.
Has there ever been a more appropriately named man than Steve Ducey?
Ducey. Shattenkirk, do you think Steve Ducey on Twitter is like Steve Deuces,
something like that? Steve Deuces, yeah. But it's,
like Shat Deuces.
What I meant to say was this: I don't believe that he is actively attempting to obstruct justice, and I don't believe that he is actively attempting to share intelligence with the Russians. I just honestly believe he's not intellectually capable enough to understand what he can and can't say.
Did you see that they try to include his name as much as possible in briefings?
So he'll keep reading. Yeah. Yes. He will read things about him and nothing else. So they have to sprinkle the name. Like, there's a NATO conference coming up, and they are instructing NATO members to keep the presentations to 3 or 4 minutes.
Yep.
So he can pay attention.
Yep.
Man.
And they're afraid to leave him in the room alone with anyone.
And he doesn't like McMaster because McMaster talks too much, because he starts talking about top secret information and straying from the topic, and McMaster
All right.
poking. I mean, look.
Matt Davis is passed out over there. I think he's taking a nap.
It's just, there are so many things that, I swear to God, if I can just get one person who's listening to this show to get beyond the personal politics of how they feel about this and just acknowledge, like, come on.
All right, you're pleading into the microphone.
We gotta cut you off. Point.
Hey, this is Game Time, man. We're wrapping up 2 hours of hockey talk. We talked a lot about hockey. We talked about Rudy Poshek and other players. Well, the last random Blues players I want to mention before we get off the air, the Russian imports, when Sergei Fedorov and Fetisov in New Jersey
and Sergei Makarov came over to play for the Sharks.
There was the Russian infusion. And the Blues decided, well, hey, we'll draft 3 Russians.
And they got nobody. Karamnov.
Prokhorov.
And who's the third one?
Havanov.
Havanov was later.
No, okay.
Sasha Havanov wasn't until the 2000s.
Karamnov. Oh, no, you're right. Prokhorov, Kramnov, Korolev.
Korolev, there you go.
And I actually saw Kramnov, I think I mentioned this before, weeks ago.
Yeah.
We saw him at the zoo, and he was dressed head to toe in denim.
He had that Canadian tuxedo on.
But because it was so hard to get blue jeans in Russia, apparently. Hey, we should probably preview tonight's Western Conference final showdown. Predators lead the series 2-1. The game is at Bridgestone Arena. We'll hear all about the atmosphere in Nashville, man, and how it's really become a hockey hotbed, and they've really turned it around and made it's a hard place to play, Jeff, if you're a visiting team, right?
Well, when you have control over the speakers and you can pump the bass through the bottom of the seats and
turn it up to 11.
I did see our buddy Dan Bradley tweeting after the game the other night that I guess they measured the noise inside the Bridgestone Arena at like 126.4 decibels or something, and his assertion, I guess, was that the world record is 130. I don't know about any of the verifiable stuff of any of that.
Is that the Kansas City Chiefs, I believe?
I don't know.
The loudest outdoor stadium
I feel like every year that somebody does a thing where they try to stage an event where we're going to try to work the crowd up. Yeah, I feel like that's pretty common.
Yeah, well, and if you're playing AC/DC over the speakers or you like it, you love it, you want some more of it,
right?
You're going to hit some decibels.
And, you know, here's the thing. With as involved as that Tim McGraw song is with the history of the Predators, how has he not come to sing the anthem yet?
I'm sure. Well, he's on tour.
But yeah, but I mean, he can stop over. He's got a jet, right? He's got some off days.
Yeah, but like, I mean, he didn't even sing the full version of the song because the Blues were playing the Predators. Well, yeah,
actually, that's not bad. Okay, I can respect that a little bit. I do think. I mean, I don't know. And also, are they paying appearance fees? Like, I wonder how much it's costing, like, out of their game entertainment budget. Like, how much do you pay a little big town to walk out and sing the anthem? And then
well,
leave?
I mean, Lady Annabelle, you're only paying her, right?
Well, I don't know. Those dudes are ladies. It's a conglomeration. They are a lady as a unit.
I like joking that I think Lady Annabelle is one person when it's like three people, and two of them are dudes. Because it shows my disdain for country music,
right?
And shows that I'm above the fray, and that, you know, I hear Lady Annabelle, and I'm like, oh yeah, I know her.
Well, and
yeah,
she's not bad. Look, if you want to show disdain for country music by talking about Lady Annabelle, all you have to do is really focus on the second word in that band name, right? Like, again, still we have to revolve the entire identity of your target audience around the Civil War, right? Because yeah.
September 29th, 2014. The Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium, the loudest in the NFL and the world. The Guinness World Record folks were on hand, and it was recorded at 136.6 decibels. I'm sorry. The old record set by the Seahawks at CenturyLink Field was 136.6. The Chiefs set a new record back in 2014, 142.2 decibels. I think a passenger jet taking off is like 125.
I don't know.
And I think the loudest I've ever seen, they used to have a decibel meter, a noise meter at Blues games sometimes. This was probably about 10 years ago. And they would get it up to about like 119, 120.
I got to tell you, as a kid, I really believed that sound meter, where like it goes back, I thought that was real.
Let's lift back the curtain. When you see the noise meter on the scoreboard at Scott Trade Center, it's fake.
Yeah. I did not know that until honestly, like I say as a kid, I was like 20 before I figured it out. That wasn't real.
But there are thousands of people at every game who think it's real because they respond to it every single time. Three stars of the show. Matt Davis, I'm going to come to you for two, so be ready. Number three star.
Number three, we'll get my buddy Brad. We have the call in here to remind me that I know way too many trivial things and to suggest a fun game for when the season fires back up.
Hey, I like it when Brad gets a star, so that's good.
That's close. That's
I can
half counts for you.
Yeah, totally. Hey, Matt Davis, who would be second star of the show in your book?
Well, I'm going to go with everybody that texted or called into the number today.
So Hockey
Lots
Bob.
Of activity. Hockey Bob, yeah. Joe, Brad.
All the texters.
And texters
Pro
are the
man, all those guys. All
right, second star. Thanks for participating. We appreciate it. I'm going to say the first star of the show, Mike Keenan, because he made all those deals possible.
Mike Keenan does win the first star.
That's the only time we'll ever give him first star.
Finally, he gets the recognition he deserves.
Fair enough. All right, we've probably overstayed our welcome. TMA is coming in to talk all sorts of stuff, sports and non-sports related. So this has been Game Time AM. We're not here tomorrow, so come back Monday for the Tom Stillman interview that we're going to be conducting this afternoon. Hopefully lots of good stuff, hopefully about half an hour. So come back on Monday for that. A little more Soundgarden, RIP Chris Cornell. I'm Brad, that's Jeff. Matt, thank you for everything this week. Good stuff.
Missed the post.
That's okay. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan KFNS St. Louis.